Harris. Little screen here. And Sinkfield's going to score. There's the dagger. It's officially over. Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
We're back, Mike. We're back. How did you spend your time away from the show?
Well, I worked quite a bit, but I had some time off around Christmas. Well, Christmas Day was and Christmas Eve, so we had a good time. And I had to work New Year's Eve and day, so I didn't really do much that night, but went to the girlfriend's parents on New Year's Eve, and we had some steak and some lobster and some mussels. So it was good eating, but I couldn't get too crazy because they had to work at 10 in the morning next day. So, but it was a good time.
Steak and lobster, man, you're living a high life.
I know, right? You can't really get the mussels were frozen, and I used to live in PEI, so. You know, those are like the best muscles you could ever get. So it wasn't quite that good, but still a nice treat on New Year's Eve for sure.
Oh, that's good. That's good. I pretty much spent the last month and a bit watching every movie that was released. I must have seen a dozen or so different movies. And spoiler alert for anyone who's going to talk or anyone's going to listen to the show, Mike and I are about to talk about the biggest movie that came out in the last 5 or so weeks. And that is Star Wars The Force Awakens. I don't know if anyone out there knows, but I am a giant Star Wars fan. And I'm not afraid to admit that when I saw this, I've now seen the movie 3 times. When I saw it the first time, I cried 3 times. I'm not going to lie. I cried right at the beginning of the movie. When the opening crawl comes up and they're telling you what the story is going to be about, I started crying. It got to me. It really got to me. I love this movie. You're not a big Star Wars fan, though, are you, Mike?
Well, I'm not. Not huge into it. I've seen all the movies, and I saw this one, obviously. And yeah, I'm not a huge Star Wars nerd, but I enjoy the films.
What did you like The Force Awakens?
Yeah, I thought it was really good. You know, it kept me interested the whole movie. It's sometimes it's hard to keep interested when a movie's over 2 hours, in my opinion. But it really, the story was good, and I thought it was better than the prequels that came out in the early 2000s. I thought it was really well done. So yeah, I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Did you cry at all?
No, I did not cry. No.
Not even when, spoiler alert, no. Spoiler alert, spoiler alert. When Kylo kills Han, when his own son kills his father?
No, it just didn't get to me that much, but I felt for the guy, but no tears.
Oh, you're a goddamn robot.
I'm a monster.
I was watching. I knew exactly what was going to happen. As soon as you see Han walk onto that bridge, I'm like, oh my God, he's going to kill him. Yeah. Han Solo is going to die. I could feel it coming. Yeah.
I knew that someone important to the story died before I went into it because I just knew I thought it was going to be either Chewbacca or him, but it turned out to be him. So, yeah, it was sad, but no tears from this guy.
Did you get to see any other flicks during the holiday season, or was Star Wars the only one you got to see?
That was the only one that I saw, yeah.
Okay, I'm going to give you a couple movie recommendations before we get into football talk. If you get a chance, see The Big Short. It was really, really good. Creed. Holy crap. Creed was amazing.
I never even seen that, a trailer for that or anything, I don't think.
Oh, Creed. I saw the trailer for it back in, I think it was the summer. And I was like, I can't believe this is going to be so good. And then I watched the movie, and it was excellent. If you like any of the Rocky movies, watch Creed. It is awesome.
Okay. So it's based. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I Michael B. Jordan plays Adonis Creed, and he is the son of Apollo Creed.
Okay.
And he goes, he's a boxer, and he wants to train. So he goes to Philadelphia and he trains with Rocky, and then there's a big fight. And it's a very by the numbers Rocky movie, but it's just so darn good that I can't help but recommend it.
All right, I'll check it out.
What else was there? Spotlight, which is about the very uncomfortable story of all those children getting molested by Priests in Boston. Not exactly a feel-good movie, but that was really well done. Excellent cast. What else was there? The Hateful Eight, the Tarantino movie.
No.
Nah, if you're a Tarantino fan, I imagine it's probably something that you really liked. I'm not a huge Tarantino guy. I liked his most recent couple movies, Inglourious Basterds and Django Unchained. I didn't think this one was as good, but there's some good performances in it, and it's a decent enough movie. But for you, like, if you don't like movies that are over 2 hours, this one chalks in at almost 3 hours long, so you might end up falling asleep. I think those are all the big ones that I saw that are sort of worthy of recommendation. So yeah, I spent my time away at the multiplex watching everything I could. So that's how I spent my time away.
I don't know if we talked about this before. Never mind. I was gonna ask if you're a popcorn buyer when you go there or not. And if you
We
buy snacks there. Yeah, we talked
have
about this
talked with this,
before.
and yeah, no, I'm not, but I go to this movie theater that has this like amazing pop machine where you can, yeah, we've definitely had this conversation before, where you can mix and match flavors. So I still go there, and it's such a big movie theater too that it shows all these little movies that aren't necessarily showing. Like, this movie's theater's in like the border of like Mississauga and Oakville, so it's a bit of a trek to get there, but it shows movies that I wouldn't get a chance to see in Hamilton because the theaters just don't show that many, especially at when Star Wars came out. Like, every bloody screen was showing Star Wars at the time. That's the reason it's made like $1.5 billion. So yeah, not a popcorn guy. But anyway, yeah, so movies was my thing. I had Christmas with the family and it was good. And I have a 5-year-old nephew, so whenever you have a little kids around, I think Christmas seems to be a little bit more exciting, and he was happy with Christmas. So it was a Christmassy Christmas, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, was it a white Christmas there? Is there snow on the ground on
Not at
Christmas Day?
all. Not at
No.
all. We got rain, I'm pretty sure. Christmas Eve, I think. Christmas Day. We got rain at some point. There was a little bit of snow a few days later, but not much. We just got snow yesterday, but it's all gone now. Like, we haven't had bad, quote unquote, bad weather. Snow and cold. It hasn't really been that snowy or cold here at all. So I don't know if this is the effect global warming's having, but yeah, it's not been a typical Canadian winter around here. How about you?
Yeah, there was some snow on the ground. It's been weather conversations aren't exactly the most entertaining, but it's been relatively warm. When I came out here, like I heard, oh, the weather's gonna be so cold, but it hasn't been that bad. So I've been able to walk to work and it's been fine. So it's been pretty good. Now, are you a Netflix watcher? Like, do you indulge in the Netflix quite a bit?
Why? What are you going to ask about Netflix? Is there something on there that you watched?
Well, I don't know. I've been getting into like Parks and Recreation. You watch that at all?
I watched that when it was on. I missed the first couple of seasons and then caught all the way back up. So yeah, I was a big park watcher.
It's pretty good, eh? I
It's
think
it
it's
was
pretty funny.
hilarious. Absolutely hilarious show.
And then everyone's been watching Making a Murderer, which we watched that too. I don't know if you've seen that.
I have not. I have actually avoided. I don't even know what it's about, honestly. I just see everyone talking about it, and I'm just like, "Nah, I'll get to it."
It's like a 10-part documentary series on this guy who goes to jail for like 18 years, gets back out, and then gets charged with another murder, and it's like follows the case. It's pretty interesting stuff. I'm sure you've been recommended it before, and you kind of went, well, scoffed at it, but it's pretty good.
Yeah, it wasn't so much I scoffed at it, it's just there was so much, like, over. Oh, another thing I did over the holidays was I caught up on The Flash and Arrow, those CW superhero shows. The Flash is one of my favorite shows ever. Like, I saw the first season of this show. I'd been recommended it because I'm a big superhero fan, and I just kept watching it. Like, it was, again, drove me to tears a lot of these episodes. I don't know if I'm turning into a giant wuss or what, but things happen on these shows and in these movies, and I'm just like sobbing like a fool. So I watched The Flash, got all the way through The Flash, and I was like, I was done that. What do I do now? So then I decided to watch Arrow, got all the way through Arrow. And in fact, just before we started recording today, I was watching the first episode of Supergirl because it's done by the same, all these shows are done by the same people. So it's like, oh, let's give Supergirl a shot. I got about 20, 30 minutes into the first episode, and so far, so good. So yeah, there's so much out there, and like, new shows are coming out, and like Always Sunny in Philadelphia. I don't know if you're a big fan of that, but that
Oh, yeah.
season just started again. There's just so much content to take in that it's almost impossible to see it all. I'm sure I'll get to this making a murderer thing eventually, but it'll be months after everyone's already on to the new thing, and then I'll just be like, "Hey, this show," because it happened with The Flash. I was always talking about The Flash, and people were like, "Yeah, this we talked about this like a year ago. Like this, you're way behind." But now I'm all caught up, so I can talk to people about it, and I get really excited. All right, so that's enough about like The Flash and movies and what we did on our holidays. People didn't come here to learn about me crying at TV shows or you eating popcorn at the movie theater or anything like that. They want to hear about football talk. So since we've been gone, there's been a fair bit of league news, but also some Ticat news. So let's get into the Ticat news first. And the first thing we can talk about is the Hamilton Tigercats had five players named league all-stars. Craig Butler, Emmanuel Davis, Simone Lawrence, Ted Laurent, and Brandon Banks were all named CFL All-Stars for 2015. I gotta say, all pretty deserving. What do you say?
Oh, happy for them all. I think they all had a great seasons. Standouts would have been, I'm sure we talked about it before, the Eastern All-Stars. You would like to see Sinkfield there. I think Tasker could have been an All-Star if he wasn't injured. I think he would have been an All-Star if he wasn't injured for those games. But yeah, I think all those players are well deserving of a All-Star team vote. So I'm pretty stoked on all those guys.
It's funny that the team that scored the most points in the season did not have a single player named as an offensive all-star. Obviously, if Zach Collaros doesn't get hurt, he's the league all-star quarterback, and maybe some of the receivers' numbers are a little higher, but it just shows me that the offense was a team unit as opposed to having great individual players. But also, as you mentioned, injuries kind of derailed some guys, and maybe next year we'll see some offensive Ticats on the all-star team.
If Claros is healthy for a full season next year, which he might not be ready at the start of the season, but I definitely think that you'll see some receivers, maybe Gable if he stays healthy. I think there's a potential for a bunch of all-star players on the offensive side of the ball for the Ticats.
For sure. A good thing to bring up, Zach Collaros. That sort of segues nicely into Jeremiah Masoli, who had one hell of a playoff run last November, and the team has signed him to a 2-year contract extension. I'm kind of happy about this. If we would have talked about this a year ago, we probably both would have been like, well, like, who cares? But after seeing how he played in Ottawa and after his benching against Toronto in the East semifinal, he looks like he could be the guy to start for this team if Collaros isn't healthy at the beginning of the year. And they could sort of maybe stay afloat, be at 500 or so while he's behind center. And then when Collaros gets back healthy, they can get off and running, you know?
Yeah, he last year he was basically the on a practice roster. I mean, this guy had fallen off the map. There was a lot of potential for him in a couple years ago. Maybe he thought he could be a great backup quarterback, and then he got some playing time, didn't do so well, and kind of dropped off the map. And then all of a sudden he gets a chance last year and really shows that he could move the ball and lead this offense. So I'm really happy that he's back. I think he's gonna do a great job as the backup. God forbid if Claris goes down again, I think he can come in and really do some great things for this offense. He brings some, different dimensions to the offense. Claros, he can run, he can scramble, but I think that Mazzoli is a little bit better than Claros at the maybe a little bit faster, maybe a little bit better at running the ball. So he brings a little different dimension to the offense. And if he's, like you said, he's starting the regular season as the starter, I have a ton of confidence that he can get some wins for this team. So I'm really happy with the signing. I think he's a dependable backup quarterback for this team.
Yeah, weird to say that after he sort of played himself out of the backup role a couple seasons ago when he had that horrid start against, I believe it was Calgary, and then Lefevre came in and he played great, and then he got hurt. It's just funny that how players can sort of sit back, take it all in, and maybe that time on the bench and on the practice roster gave him that hunger, that desire to compete again. And I was super impressed with how he played in the East final, and he outplayed Henry Burris, who ended up going on to be league MOP. Like, those guys were neck and neck. And if you would have told me that the Ticats were going to start Jeremiah Mazzoli in a playoff game against Henry Burris and they were going to be in it the entire time, I probably wouldn't have believed you.
No, neither would I. I was ecstatic about his performance in the East Final. It was just incredible. I mean, he had that one interception, but it didn't really cost the team that much. And after that, he played, lights out. So, yeah, I'm more than happy that he's re-signed. It's just a nice, dependable backup quarterback to have. You know, if Claros is injured or whatever, that we have a guy behind him that can do the job.
Another player the Ticats re-upped with was Johnny Sears Jr. And when he played, man, he might have been their best defensive back before Emmanuel Davis sort of took over that role last year. Unfortunately, he got hurt and missed a ton of games. But if he can stay healthy, another guy who I think could be a difference maker in the secondary.
Yeah, yeah. Like his first game last year, two picks, a pick six. So he really showed what he has, really early on in the season. So if he can, like you said, if he can stay healthy and be in there for most of the games, he can be a big difference maker in that secondary.
I think this might also be one of those things where they bring him in. He's not going to be super expensive, especially because he missed a lot of time last year. Maybe he is a guy that they have now in the fold in case they lose someone like Emmanuel Davis, who is still a free agent. He could sign elsewhere for more money. Plug in Sears in Davis's position. I don't think the Ticats lose much, and that's saying a lot because Davis was an all-star last year.
Yeah, he can do the job just as well, I think, as Emmanuel Davis. Not taking anything away from him, he's a great player, but I think Johnny Sears Jr. is right up there in his caliber of player.
Yeah, again, if he stays healthy, I think he can have a monster season. And we didn't really know who Emmanuel Davis was going into last season. He was not a known commodity. He just went out there. He had improved. He'd been with the team for a while, and yeah, he had started, but last year was a breakout year for him, so maybe Sears stays healthy. Maybe he plays 15, 16 games, and he has a breakout season. You never know. So the coaching carousel, like as soon as we stopped recording, it seemed like all hell broke loose in the coaching ranks in the CFL. I'm thinking next year maybe we wait a week before we take our break because, holy crap, the stuff that happened between like the day after the Grey Cup and the following Monday was just – it was insane. We had Chris Jones leaving Edmonton after winning Grey Cup to go to Saskatchewan. Okay, so that's the first domino that falls. Then we have Jason Moss leaving Ottawa to head to Edmonton to become their head coach. And then there was that huge, stupid controversy about compensation and how the Red Blacks weren't going to allow Moss out of his contract and how like it was just nuts. Then we had Jeff Tedford resigning in BC and Wally Buono returning to the sidelines. And he's going to be the head coach of BC again. Paul Appelese was named the offensive coordinator in Winnipeg. Rick Stubler goes back to Toronto as the defensive coordinator. The Red Blacks replaced Jason Moss with Jamie Elizondo, who was in Toronto, which is where they got Moss. And then there was the whole Noel Thorpe thing with him resigning in Montreal and then wanting to go to Edmonton and then them not allowing it. It was like, it was nuts.
Yeah, yeah, I've never seen anything like that. Like right after the Grey Cup, just so many changes. You know, it's hard to pick one out and talk about it because there are just so many changes that happened. I guess the biggest one would be Chris Jones to Saskatchewan because, I can't remember a time where a head coach wins the Grey Cup and then leaves so quickly. The rumors were out there that, he might go to Saskatchewan, but I just wasn't really sure that it would happen. I just figured that maybe he would stick around and, try to win some more Grey Cups here in Edmonton. But yeah, he's gone now and he's got a new challenge ahead of him. And we shall see how quickly he can turn around a team that was just really bad this year.
Yeah, everyone's kind of comparing Jones going to Saskatchewan to when Jones went to Edmonton. Edmonton was coming off a 4-14 season, and he turned them around right away. The difference I see there is Edmonton wasn't loaded with a bunch of high-priced veteran players that were underperforming. They seem to be more of a young team or a younger team that just didn't know how to win yet, and Jones kind of instilled that mentality in them. I think the Riders will be a better team. Like it's hard to be worse than 3-15. I think he'll probably get them into the playoffs next year, but I don't think we should expect a Edmonton like turnaround to where they go from 3-15 to like 12-6. I think that's maybe expecting a little too much.
Yeah, and he got down to business pretty quickly. I mean, he released what was it like? I can't remember the number, but
20 some odd guys.
Yeah, pretty much as soon as he got there, so he's not messing around. I expect him to be better. I don't, they still have some key pieces there like Durant and Dressler and, some offensive weapons and But yeah, it's not going to be an instant turnaround, and it's gonna take some time to rebuild this thing. But yeah, I totally expect them to be better than 3 wins, that's for sure.
Okay, so out of all these moves, which one do you, is Jones the one that you like the most? Like, is that the one that you think will have the most positive impact on his team?
Yeah, I'd have to say so, just because of his track record in Edmonton. 4-14 to a couple years later, Grey Cup champions. He really turned that team around, turned that culture around in Edmonton. So I gotta say that's probably the best move in the off season. Well, what do you think is the best one?
I don't want to sound like a repeat of you. I think the Jones move is a really good one. I like Lapolis being named the Bombers offensive coordinator. Their one of their big problems last year was keeping Drew Willie healthy. Obviously, he got hurt, and then what was it, game five, game six, didn't play the rest of the season. But a lot of that was because Marcel Belfay, as much as I have respect for him and what he did here in Hamilton in reversing the losing culture that we had here, Lapolis is just above and beyond a way better offensive coordinator than Belfay would ever be. And I think they got some pieces there that if they can stay healthy and put it all together, they could be one of those surprise teams this year that come from a non-playoff spot and make the leap into a playoff team. And also, if O'Shea does fail, if this doesn't work out, they do have now the guy that they can replace him with. Like, to be fair, Lapolis never should have been fired as the head coach in the first place. He was the scapegoat for a team that just underachieved, but I think he was given the boot way too soon. This is sort of a makeup for that. I think this is now his third time coaching Winnipeg. I think he was the offense coordinator there before, and then the head coach now this. That to me is one of the best moves in the offseason that could have the biggest impact, especially because Winnipeg's defense is decent. They have Jamal Westerman, who in my mind is one of the best defensive players in the league. I think this move here, if they can get the Bombers offense from terrible to like league average, I think they could make a leap into a dangerous playoff team.
Yeah, I totally agree. I thought that last year, if Willie stayed healthy, I think they would have had a shot at the playoffs. They tried to make improvements on the offensive line last year, and I saw they re-up Stanley Bryant. And I think if Willie stays healthy, I think that Paul Aphelios will put in a really good system for him. He'll work to his assets and get this thing going for them. He's a experienced coach. I'm a little bit surprised that he came back. He's working for TSN and had a cushy job there. I'm surprised he came back for a offensive coordinator's job and not a head coaching job. But yeah, I think he's going to be great for Winnipeg. I think that the offense is going to improve tremendously. They re-signed Matt Nichols, which is a I'm not the hugest fan of Nichols, but he's an experienced quarterback, and he'd be a good backup for Drew Willie. If Willie stays healthy with Paul Aphelios, calling the plays, I think they'll be a pretty good team.
So out of all these moves, which one left you scratching your head, or which one do you look at as maybe not the best hire? I'm not saying like a Casey Crehan as defensive coordinator in Toronto type thing where we're going to laugh in their face, but which one here has you most concerned with the team that hired them going forward?
I might catch some heat for this, but I was thinking about it, and I kind of scratched my head a little bit with the Jason Moss hiring in Edmonton. I know that he did a great job for Ottawa, but we're talking about a guy that's had very little experience, really. He was I think a quarterback's coach 1 year. I believe he was a quarterback's coach, and then he takes over the offensive coordinator in Ottawa. And yes, he's done a great job, but we've seen coordinators that have a lot of experience come into the head coaching job and just not do a good job, like Cortez,
Greg Marshall.
Rich Stubler, Greg Marshall, Rich Stubler. The list goes on and on of guys that have years and years and years of experience and just can't do it as a head coach. So, I could be completely wrong, but I just think that maybe it might be a little too quick for Jason Moss to be a head coach. I just think that he doesn't might not have enough experience.
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong. I too was not as thrilled with the idea of him becoming head coach so quickly. The one thing that as a Ticats fan makes me happy is that he's no longer the offensive coordinator in Ottawa. I think he's the guy that deserves the lion's share of the credit for Ottawa turning into that offensive juggernaut that we saw in 2015. I think it was his system, his teaching that got that team, in addition to adding all of those players, that got that team to be as good as they were. So him leaving Ottawa, I think, is a loss for them. But I'm with you. I'm kind of, again, maybe he'll turn into a great head coach. You mentioned that we've seen head coaches with a lot of experience not succeed. We've seen head coaches with little experience not succeed either. And, you know, Corey Chamberlain, yeah, he did win a Grey Cup, but he was fired less than 2 years later. So sometimes you never know who's going to succeed and who's going to fail, but this to me seems a little too soon, I think, for Jason Moss. Now, obviously, his stock was never going to be higher than it was after what he did in Ottawa because they were the league's worst offense in 2014, and he turned them into one of the league's best offenses in 2015. So he struck while the iron was hot, so good on him. But this makes me think that Edmonton repeating or even being back up in the upper echelon is going to be hard to do.
It's going to be interesting to see how well he does. You know, like we talked about, it's just so little experience that you just never know what's going to happen. You know, maybe he could do a great job, but like it's just you just don't know because he's only had 2 years coaching. So maybe it's a little too much too soon for him, but we shall see what happens next season. And you know, maybe he takes the team takes his offense to a new level because, you know, he's kind of struggled all year. So if he can get the offense really clicking, then maybe he's a great hire, but I'm just not sure yet.
The hire that I sort of don't like at all from an unbiased perspective, from a biased perspective, I love this hire, but from an unbiased perspective, I don't, is the Red Blacks replacing Moss with Jamie Elizondo. Elizondo has been an offensive coordinator in the CFL before, and it was with the Argos in 2010 and 2011. And those teams that he had there, sure, he didn't have the talent that he had in Ottawa, but those teams in 2010, they scored the fewest points. And in 2011, they scored the second fewest points, and they were the only team in either year to not crack the 400 point mark. If you're not scoring 400, 450 points, your offense is not very good in an 18 game season. So this one to me, like I said, Moss deserves a lot of the credit for getting that Red Blacks offense to produce. I see them taking a huge step backwards with Elizondo as the offensive coordinator.
Yeah, those were the Cleo Lemon years.
Yeah, and Stephen Giles. I know, obviously, Henry Burris is better than those two guys, but look, the Cleo Lemon years saw them win 9 games and get to the playoffs and win a playoff game. So, but the offense just wasn't. They won that playoff game against the Ticats more because Hamilton couldn't do anything than it was the offense being able to move the ball. And Ottawa's defense was good last year, but they won a lot of those games because the Henry Burris was not making mistakes. Those receivers were catching a lot of passes. They were able to run the ball. They got a lot of protection, and they were healthy. I think that's a big thing that we kind of glossed over in this is Ottawa was really super healthy last year. To expect that 2 years in a row, and now you lose your offensive coordinator who installed this system that worked to near perfection. I just don't see anything but Ottawa taking a step back.
Yeah, you gotta think that's gonna happen because injuries happen. You know, not with Burris. Burris just is like, he's like, I don't understand. He just doesn't get injured. But you know, the 2010, 2011 Argonauts depended on their defense a lot. You know, they had Cleo Lemon and Stephen Giles. They didn't move the ball that well. You know, there's a lot of two and outs. They're just. It wasn't a very good offense, and you know that's the guy that was running it. Yes, the players weren't that great for him, but you know, here's his second chance with some really really talented players. You know, Ottawa just re-signed Chris Williams, and he was versus number one target this year. So you know, there's a lot of talent there. If he can't get this thing going, then he's just not a good coordinator because you know the talent's there and the opportunity's there for him to prove himself. And you know, show that he's a good coordinator.
Hey, he had Chad Owens in those 2 years in Toronto, and the 1 year, I think it was 2011, Owens didn't have a touchdown catch. Like, he's the number one receiver in Toronto. Like him or dislike him, he's their go-to guy. How does the go-to guy not have a touchdown catch?
Yeah,
Like, how's that even possible?
it doesn't seem that you know, it's I can't explain it because I mean, that's how bad the offense was there. It was just terrible to watch. You just, you know, for him not to have a touchdown, it just blows my mind.
But yeah, so Elizondo's hiring is the one that I'm most interested in following this season to see how he can implement a system similar to Moss's that will keep that Ottawa team humming because the Ticats, are going to get, if Caleros can come back healthy, I think they're going to be the same type of team. Maybe not as dominant because they're going to lose some guys in free agency, but they're still going to be a solid team. As long as Ken Austin's coaching this team, they're going to be a team that's in the hunt to make the playoffs, to make the Grey Cup, to win the Grey Cup. I think Toronto is going to be a better team. We didn't really talk about Stubler's hiring as defensive coordinator, but that's a massive upgrade from Casey Crehan. So I think Toronto's going to be better next year. So it might not even be that Ottawa falls off, but the teams that were behind them this year just catch up to them.
When I saw the Stubler, you know, re-signed in Toronto, I thought it was very interesting. You know, I remember back when he was a defensive coordinator, you know, those defenses were top-notch. They were, you know, if not the best in the league, near the top of the heap. They, you know, they were the bend, don't break. You know, they'd allow the yards, but then they wouldn't allow the touchdowns. So, you know, those are the Damon Allen years. Michael Bishop was in there a bit too. You know, the offense wasn't great, but the defense was spectacular. So I'm interested to see if he can bring back those years for the Argonauts. You know, if he can rise the defense to a new level, then I think the Argonauts could be a real contender next year.
So talking about Stubler re-signing in Toronto, great segue into some player news, which is the Argos re-signing a couple players. Ricky Ray is the big one, obviously, and they re-signed some schmuck named Ricky Foley, who Stubler can work with on defense, you know, our buddy there. But two pretty big signings by the Argos, especially Ray, kind of surprising, eh?
Yeah, you know, there was always the question of, would they re-sign Ray? Would they let him go? Because Trevor Harris is, you know, young up-and-comer. I was a little bit surprised. You know, I figured that they might go with the younger guy. Ray's getting up there in age. He might be 35, 36 now. So, you know, we don't know how many years he has left, especially with all his injury troubles that he's had. So it's surprising, but Ray is such a good quarterback when he's healthy. So if they can get a couple more years out of them, maybe they're Grey Cup contenders for a couple more years and can get one or two more championships out of them. So I can kind of see why they brought him back. They said they're trying to sign Harris, but I'm doubtful that's gonna happen. You know, I think that he wants to be a starting quarterback in the league, but I don't really see where there's an opening. Maybe in Montreal, but I'm not sure he's going to be a starter somewhere else. So I'm not sure what he's going to do, but you know, if they could get him back, that would be a great backup quarterback for them for sure. But Ray's great, so we'll see how he does if he can stay healthy.
Yeah, I think if he stays healthy, this is another reason why I think the Argos are going to be better next year. Ray's not going to miss 15 or so games like he did last year. He had that shoulder problem, but that got to be fully healthy by the start of next season. Yeah, he is older, and there is the concern that they're going to lose Trevor Harris to another team. But like you said, there's not many starting jobs out there for a quarterback. Like, where is he going to go where he's going to be the unquestioned number one quarterback? Ray maybe has a year, 2 years, three tops left. I know he's not that old, like Henry Burris is much older, but Ray has dealt with injury troubles, so he could probably leave sooner than Burris even would. But I think it's a smart signing. I believe it's a team friendly. Like, there's incentives in this contract. It's a low base salary, at least low for Ray, where he can make more money the more he plays and the better he performs. So it's not surprising. I think it leaves the window open for them to bring Harrison on a similar contract, maybe even have them duel for the starting quarterback job. I don't know. I just see this as maybe Ray is ready to resume that mantle as the best quarterback in the CFL.
Yeah, and he has those new receivers that's, you know, were rookies last year, like Hazleton, Gurley, and Elliott. So there's a lot of talent there that he can work with. So I think with a healthy Ray, they could put up some pretty big numbers with that talented receiving corps. So, you know, maybe you're right. Maybe he's ready to come back and put up some huge numbers and take over, you know, the number one quarterback spot in the league. I hope not. I hope Claros is at the top of the heap. But you know, Ray has the talent to take over that spot once again.
The other Ricky signing in Toronto, Foley, I'm just happy that he signed with Toronto, so therefore there's no concern that he'll sign with Hamilton.
Yeah, for sure. It's interesting that he gets another contract after he was let go a couple years ago by the Argos. But, you know, he's the number one enemy in the league for me, and on the number one enemy team, per se. So, you know, it's fun to hate the Argos and Ricky Foley. So It's a perfect match.
Yeah, it only seems right that he plays in Toronto. So good
Yes.
on you. Thanks for re-signing and not coming down the QEW to play in Hamilton.
Yeah.
The other, I would say, maybe this is the biggest player news of the offseason so far, and that is the retirement of John Cornish. He might go down as one of the greatest running backs, forget Canadian running backs, just pure running backs in league history. His career wasn't long as a starter, but the accomplishments, Grey Cup champion, MOP, three most outstanding Canadian awards. As soon as he took over for Joffrey Reynolds, late, I believe his first start actually, in place of Joffrey Reynolds was the Moncton game against the Ticats in 2011. And ever since then, just best player in the league whenever he's healthy, almost hands down.
Yeah, he had a great career. Too bad it wasn't longer. We were talking about it in earlier episodes, if they were going to let him go and re-sign Messam maybe. And, I was pretty surprised when he announced his retirement. I don't know, he's pretty young. He's only about 30 years old, but I guess he's ready to move on with his life. But yeah, I think that his career was short, but he's a definite Hall of Famer. And it was a pleasure to watch him play for the couple seasons that we saw him as a starter.
You stole the question right out from under me. I was going to ask, do you think he's a Hall of Fame player? Even though it was a short career, it was a very impactful one. And length of career doesn't seem to really matter much when it comes to being in the Hall of Fame in the CFL. It's the impact you make on the game. Because like Doug Flutie didn't play up here very long, whereas like Anthony Calvillo did. So there's players in the Hall of Fame who played here 3, 4, 5 years and still got into the Hall of Fame. So you think Cornish is a no doubt slam dunk Hall of Famer, eh?
I think he has to be. I mean, he's just, the first Canadian to win MOP in, years and years and years and years. He's just made such a big impact. And now we see that running back position, there's more players that are Canadian that are running backs now. So I think he made a huge impact on the game. And I just, yes, it was a short career, but I think you just have to look past that because of what he did when he was playing the game.
I kind of look at Hall of Famers as at any point in their career, were they considered either the best at their position or even the best in the game in total? And Cornish has both of those. He lost the MOP to Chad Owens in 2012, and Chad Owens' dislike aside, I still think Cornish should have won that award. He should have been back-to-back MOPs. He was the player. The quarterbacks are the face of the league, but he was, as a running back and especially as a Canadian, the player to watch, and he was so dominant. What, 1,800 yards rushing one season? The season when MOP had something like 1,800 yards rushing. Like, that's incredible.
You don't see those numbers that like Mike Pringle had 2,001 year, but usually you don't see those numbers 1,800, 1,900, 1,700 yards rushing in the CFL. So putting up those kind of numbers is just incredible.
No, and who led the league in rushing last year? Was it Sutton in Montreal? And he, what, like, I can't remember, but the guys who, like, there was, I think, 2 or 3,000 yard rushers, and they barely cracked 1,000 yards. So there's just to put up 1,800. He averaged over 100 yards rushing a game. That's incredible.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah. So I know he retired young. I'm guessing, he's a smart guy. He had been taking all these hits to the head. He's had concussion problems the last 2 years. I think he just decided, hey, I've loved playing football, but I'm ready to move on. I don't want to be one of those guys who hangs on in an old age. My brain is shot. I just think that he knew that his body didn't want to take the pounding anymore, and he got out. And I'm gonna miss watching him play, but I wish him all the best in whatever he chooses to do in the future. I hope he still finds a way to be around the game because I think he's a really smart guy who has a lot that he can contribute to the CFL.
Yeah, absolutely. Now we just see who takes over the mantle as the best, Canadian running back in the league. You got Messam and you got Harris. So those two guys can battle it out. Messam is a beast. I think he can take over that role. I think the best of him is yet to come, even though he's at probably around 30 years old. He hasn't taken the beating that Cornish took. So yeah, a great career and sad to see him go, but it's good to see him get out before, things get too far with the concussions and the injuries.
So before we leave everyone for this week, there's a few players were released during the time we were away as well. Some big name guys. You mentioned the Riders released a crap ton of people. One of those guys was Tyron Brackenridge. I wasn't all that surprised that he was let go, to be honest. Again, a veteran guy. He was a good player for them last year, one of their better defensive players, but high price player who they signed as a like not as a free agent, but he signed an extension last year, probably making a lot of money. I wasn't really surprised to see him go.
No, it wasn't that big of a shock. You know, you figured that some of these veteran guys would get let go, and he was one of them. So Chris Jones came in there and really cleaned house. So it's going to be a younger team, a lot of changes coming. So yeah, I wasn't shocked either. Maybe he signs somewhere else, maybe he doesn't, but I think he could probably contribute somewhere for a lower salary. But yeah, I wasn't too shocked that he was let go.
Yeah, we around this time last year, I believe, Dante Marsh was released by the BC Lions, and he never ended up signing anywhere. I'm wondering if maybe Brackenridge is in the same boat. I think Marsh could have signed somewhere and been a very serviceable player, if not a great player for some team in the secondary. I think Brackenridge is the same way. But he wasn't the only veteran player released. Juwan Simpson was let go in Calgary, which kind of did surprise me. I know he's older, making a little bit more money. But he still seems like a guy that can play the game.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's a leader. Yeah, he's a little bit older, but I totally agree. I think he could re-sign somewhere else, and well, not re-sign, but sign somewhere else and really contribute. You know, maybe as a rotation player or something. Maybe he's a little worn down now or something, but he could be a great locker room guy for any team in the league.
Yeah, and in the news of him being released, there was also talk that Keon Raymond probably won't be re-signed by Calgary. It seems as if Calgary's going to go a lot younger on defense, and with Brackenridge and Simpson and Raymond out there for teams can get a good player probably relatively inexpensively, because and these guys are going to come in with chips on their shoulder and want to prove their old team's wrong. I see wherever these guys sign, I think they're all going to get a really, really good player.
Maybe it's a sign that Stubler was a little, like, was loyal to the veteran guys, and you know, there's a new guy coming as defensive coordinator, and he just wanted to start fresh and get a little bit younger. So maybe they find a place. Maybe one or two of them finds a place in Toronto with Stubler taking over there.
That would make a whole lot of sense. I could see a guy like Raymond signing with the Argos. He is, all these guys are older. They're all in their 30s. So
Yeah,
I'm
but
always leery
he.
about free agent guys in their 30s being signed because you don't know how much they have left in the tank, or you don't know, like you just don't know. Like the teams that they were with let them go, and they obviously let them go for a reason, probably not just monetarily. It's always scary to me when you see guys. If you get a guy, 25, 26, 27, 28, and they sign as a free agent, I'm more, well, they're still in their prime. These guys that are 32, 33, I'm always skeptical about them. I don't get me wrong, any of these guys could come to the Ticats and I'd be happy with it. I don't think any of them are going to, but I'm always wary of bringing in these mid-30s guys because you don't know how much they really have left in the tank.
You're right, but I think that Toronto's secondary was really young, and maybe they could benefit from some of these older guys signing with them. So, you know, it could be a good move for them.
Yeah, and you're talking about Stubler and them. That to me, I didn't think of it until you mentioned it, but that does make a ton of sense. There was one more big player let go, and this one kind of bothered me. We'll get into it. It was the Red Blacks releasing Sean Lemon. Now, Lemon came back after being in NFL training camps. I think he's with Pittsburgh, and I think he went to San Francisco. And after he had sort of bounced around there, he came back to the CFL. He signed a 3-year deal with the Red Blacks. Now, they let him go so that he could get NFL opportunities again this offseason. If that was the case, there are 1-year contracts in the CFL. Why was he not signed to? Why did he not come and say, I want to try the NFL next season? Sign me to a 1-year deal. Why was he given this, what essentially became a joke of a 3-year contract that he was never going to live up to? I've seen some Red Black supporters and Red Black like media people talk about how, oh, it was a verbal agreement that they would let him go. Well, then sign him to a 1-year contract. Like, why is he signed to a 3-year deal? And then I hate when teams do this, when the Argos are notorious for doing this. They'll sign guys to longer term deals, then let them go to go try the NFL. I don't mind. I understand players want to make the most money, and playing in the NFL gives you more money. If they can play in the NFL, good for them. I do not in any way want guys to not try to make as much money as they can in as little time as possible. Football careers are very short. We have like there's a system in place where they can sign, and I just oh it infuriates me when this happens.
Yeah, it doesn't make much sense. I mean, like, I'm just gonna repeat what you said, but like, why sign a 3-year contract if you're only gonna be here for, you know, half a season or whatever it was? And usually players go down, they try out for the NFL and they come back and then that's it. You know, I don't know. I don't see Lemon, you know, trying again and then making a team. I don't see that happening. So I don't understand it. I'm sure he signed a pretty hefty contract with the Red Blacks. I just don't see him being in the NFL. I see him coming back again and maybe signing, another 3-year contract, and then what are they going to let him go again for NFL opportunities? It just doesn't make sense to me.
Well, what bothers me is that it gives these teams that do this, I think, an advantage in signing these players because they basically say, sign whatever you want. If you want to leave, we'll let you go. And then they'll just end up coming back. And then the teams that hold players to their contracts are viewed as player unfriendly. And so a team like the Ticats or the Alouettes or whomever is out there that holds these players to, no, you signed a 3-year contract, you will play for us for 3 years. Players aren't going to want to play there. And to me, that's not the fault of the team. Like, it's just when you see teams like Ottawa and Toronto, and Ottawa this offseason has just been, I can't even put into words how annoyed I've been at what they've done. That whole compensation thing with Jason Moss made me want to strangle like that franchise. Like, that was just ridiculous. There's no rules in place on what coaches can and can't do. Fine. Maybe there should be a rule. But the agreement has always been if a guy is going to get a promotion, you let him go. You don't hold him back and expect a draft pick or a player or money or anything from a team. And yet Ottawa comes in, they've been in the league 2 years. Now they want to rewrite the rules and change the rules to suit their needs. It's absolutely ridiculous. They got all their coaches who were still under contract, and they didn't think to say, oh, well, we'll give you compensation for this. They benefited from a system, and then when the system doesn't benefit them, they want to change the rules. It pissed me off to no end. Like, I had already gotten a little bit of a dislike for the Red Blacks because of what happened this year with the whole Henry Burris, Simone Lawrence thing, and the rivalry built up and all that stuff. But this just made me want, like, oh my God, I was just so angry, and oh, it just makes me want to slap somebody.
Well, it adds to the rivalry, right? It's a reason to hate them even more. You got Ottawa now, that's right up there with one of the hated teams in the league. So it's yeah, I didn't agree with the compensation thing. It seems a little silly. If the guy's gonna get a promotion and be a head coach, then that's the way it should be. And the commissioner stepped in and kind of put a kibosh on or some of the coaching moves that were going on. Noel Thorpe was gonna bolt Edmonton. That was the presumption, and that didn't happen. He signed a 2-year deal in Montreal now, so that seems kind of weird. He wanted out, but now he's back in for 2 years. Jim Popp tried. Apparently he had offers for two head coaching positions, and Popp wouldn't let him leave. So maybe there's some tension there, and it's kind of an awkward situation for both guys. But yeah, I think that the commissioner needs to make some rules on this so it's not such a gray area of, should there be this, should there be that. You need to step in and really, change it up and make it so there's not this, weirdness going on between teams with compensation and all that stuff.
Yeah, it was the wild, wild west with coaching moves, man. It was just like there were no laws, and just everyone went and did their own thing, and it sure made for one heck of an interesting time. So I'm glad we got a chance to get back into the booth and record some stuff.
Yeah.
Who knows when we're going to get back because it seems like things are dying down a bit, but free agency is a little under a month away, and there are still a lot of players out there that haven't been re-signed. So we still have some interesting stuff ahead, and when we get back here, I'm sure we're going to have a lot to talk about.
Yeah, free agency is always fun, and this year there's a ton of free agents. So, and not a lot have been signed, re-signed yet. So there's still a lot of them out there. So we'll get back to it once that goes down, and then there's the draft, and there'll be stuff to talk about for sure in the upcoming months.
The season will be here before we know it, and we'll wonder where that time went, and then the season will be over again, and we'll wonder how the season went by so fast. It's
Yeah,
the same every
exactly.
year. So that's all for this week. Don't forget that you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. We didn't ask any questions this week, or we didn't get any questions from you guys this week, but even if we don't ask, feel free to send them our way. We'll keep them and use them on a future show. And if you want to hit us up, you can find Mike and myself on Twitter. Mike, your Twitter handle as always, buddy.
Mike_Ticats.
I'm Josh Smith _82. When this goes up on Three Down Nation, you can post your questions there as well. So for the first episode of 2016 of Podski Wee Wee, we are done for the week, and I am Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.